Breakthrough.
You are now listening to Breakthrough News. It's 5 p.m. You're listening to Breakthrough News, and this is The Punch Out. We're following the news all day so you don't have to, giving you everything you need to know about what's in the headlines and what should be. And yes, we are back with you here on The Punch Out, 21st of July, 2021. Very happy to be back with you as we always are, and we got plenty for you here on the show, as we always do. We're going to be talking about the infrastructure games beginning as it concerns the United States Congress and whether or not all of the bridges in the United States will collapse in the near future. We're going to be talking about Biden launching a drone strike on Somalia. But before we get to either of those two very important stories, we're going to be talking about the dismal pay that farm workers are given here in the U.S. Well, in the extreme heat that is sweeping the West Coast and other parts of the United States, all sorts of harrowing images have emerged of farm workers toiling in 100 plus degree temperatures to make sure we all have some food on our plates, which makes this as good a time as any to remind people that farm workers are consistently some of the worst paid workers in the United States of America, with lower average wages than other comparable workers, that is, workers in other low wage industries. In fact, the average wage of farm workers is only 60% of what comparable workers outside of agriculture make, according to a new analysis by the Economic Policy Institute. Farm workers are also subject to massive exploitation as it concerns wage and hour laws. 70% of federal investigations done into farms find violations of labor laws. Farm workers are also excluded from the National Labor Relations Act protections and a range of other labor laws. And the Supreme Court just issued a ruling limiting the access of labor organizers to the fields in an effort to help employers ban, essentially, or stop unions from growing in the fields. There are roughly 1.7 million farm workers in the United States, half of whom are undocumented and 10% of whom are brought to the United States under the H-2A Agricultural Workers Visa Program. As the Economic Policy Institute details, quote, in 2020, the average wage of all non-supervisory farm workers was $14.62 per hour. The average wage for production and non-supervisory non-farm workers, the most appropriate cohort of non-agricultural workers to compare with farm workers, was $24.67, end quote. In Fresno County, California, it's one of the top agricultural counties in the state of California, which is one of the top agricultural states here in the United States. If you're single with no kids, the living wage is $14.40. So you are 22 cents an hour away from being in poverty. However, if you were single with one kid and a farm worker, I should say, making this average wage of $14.62, if you were a single farm worker with one kid, the living wage number would be $34.08, which means that you are $19 an hour below the real poverty line. The living wage for two working adults with one child in Fresno County is $31.72. So two farm workers making the average wage with one child would be about $2 an hour below the poverty line. In Yakima, Washington, another agricultural center here in the U.S., a single parent who is also a farm worker making the average wage with one child would be about $12.50 an hour below the poverty line. And two farm workers with one child would be about $3 an hour over the living wage. But if they had two kids, they'd be basically right on the line. So on the cusp of poverty, if you will. Bottom line here, the average farm worker's wage is a poverty wage. For the H-2A workers, it's even worse. Now, they're paid under something called the Adverse Effect Wage Rate, which is supposed to be based on some sort of prevailing wage standard, but the average wage is even lower when compared to other workers and other farm workers. As the Economic Policy Institute details, quote, although the adverse effect wage rate varies by region, the Department of Labor reported that the nationwide average hourly AEWR in 2020 was $13.68 per hour. But, and this is crucial, Quote, in Florida and Georgia, the top two states for H-2A employment, and where a quarter of all H-2A jobs were located in 2020, H-2A workers were paid the lowest overall state AEWR at $11.71 per hour. In Okeechobee County, Florida, that's a big agricultural region, an H-2A worker with no kids would still be about $2 below the living wage standard, that is, in poverty. Also worth noting that these workers are basically like indentured servants in this H-2A program because you cannot switch employers. And just to reiterate here, farm workers are also having their wages stolen at very high rates. As we mentioned at the top, 70% of investigations into farms are finding labor violations. But believe it or not, there's only a 1.1% chance any particular farm employer will be investigated in a given year. So as you look down at your meals over the next few days, just remember, a lot of the workers that made it possible are toiling in very dangerous working conditions for poverty wages and with almost no protections for their legal rights. Well, Joe Biden has joined the past three presidents of the United States in something of a ritual here. That's the bombing of Somalia. A drone strike took place yesterday and was conducted against the Al-Shabaab insurgent group, seemingly to aid in a defensive stand being mounted by some troops of the Somali National Army. That's the government's military. This follows a flurry of attacks inside of Somalia and Kenya by Al-Shabaab since May, including a suicide bombing in Mogadishu in early July that seemed to target government intelligence officers. The drone strike is a reminder that the conflict continues to rage in Somalia after a U.S.-Ethiopian invasion in 2007 destabilized the country, plunging it back into a civil war after a brief respite from a civil war that had begun in 1991. And at that time, as 2005-2007 roughly, the U.S. was adamantly opposed to a group known as the Islamic Courts Union ruling the country, even though, just to remind you again, there'd been a civil war from 91 to 2005, ICU, Islamic Courts Union, is able to reunify the country for the first time since 91, but nevertheless, they weren't a reliable enough client in a geostrategically important region for the U.S., so they roped in their Ethiopian allies for an invasion that was backed with U.S. air power, intelligence, and special forces. When the invasion became bogged down in an occupation, a range of African nations also got roped in to the broader U.S.-driven project to stabilize the country, whose quote-unquote government was, let's say, less than representative. And over the years, Kenya has become a major player in the overall foreign efforts there in Somalia. Al-Shabaab, which maintains an affiliation with Al-Qaeda, is basically the people within that old Islamic Courts Union who refused to go with the U.S.-Ethiopian writ. Al-Shabaab controls large swaths of southern Somalia, and the government, which has the backing of the so-called international community, is an alliance of powerful clans that often don't see 100% eye-to-eye with one another. Earlier this year, in fact, there was a political crisis over how to pick the next president. The current president wanted to stay in power longer, in his telling, in order to provide more security and stability to open the way for one-person, one-vote elections in a few years. His opponents accused him of an outright power grab, and they gained the backing of the U.S. in particular, who feared not moving forward with the indirect elections for president in Somalia, which is essentially they have a meeting of the big clan leaders that support this government, and they choose who the president's going to be, that if they moved away from that system, the fig leaf of democracy the U.S. is claiming to support in Somalia would fall away, revealing the truth, which is that the U.S. destabilized Somalia and is propping up a government that can't really control the country, which has deepened and prolonged the conflict there. Biden's drone strike this week shows that the U.S. remains committed to the same agenda that has really only brought ruin to the Horn of Africa. This week marks the beginning of various legislative games and maneuvers as it regards the infrastructure plans of Democrats in Congress and in the White House. As we go to press, the Senate is set to conduct a procedural vote on the framework of the so-called bipartisan infrastructure bill. Quote unquote, bipartisan infrastructure bill. Republicans are complaining and almost certainly will uniformly oppose this procedural vote because they say, well, the details haven't been worked out and finalized, so we can't vote on something that we don't know what exactly it's going to be. And they object to what Schumer is pretty obviously doing, trying to lock them into a broad framework of a deal. Schumer said, of course, we're going to continue to negotiate, but he's trying to lock them into a broad framework of a deal. And Republicans, of course, want freedom of action to hold up the idea of an infrastructure bill even longer by changing the framework if, you know, they don't like what they're hearing on some of these points. So all that being said, the vote today is widely expected to fail. Talks will almost certainly continue over the weekend, and there will almost certainly be another procedural vote of the same type taken next week. Now, the bipartisan plan is touted as being $1.2 trillion cost-wise, but in fact, it's only about $600 billion in new money. That's well below the $2.5 trillion infrastructure funding deficit. So even though it isn't clear exactly how the money that they are appropriating, if they do, will be spent, no matter what, it isn't enough to fix the bridges, dams, levees, pipes, and roads. The process is mainly hung up on the issue of how to pay for it. Republicans and some moderate Democrats are rejecting tax increases on rich people or corporations, and Republicans even oppose beefing up the ability of the IRS to collect unpaid taxes. Republicans want the entire thing to be paid for by quote-unquote user fees. That's tolls and similar things like tolls. Democrats seem willing to more or less drop the tax hike idea and just pass a bill without paying for it up front, although that's something that some Democrats have said that they don't want to do and are unwilling to do, so sort of an unknown there. And that's really the heart of what Schumer seems to be trying to do here, and that's lay the groundwork to push forward a party line vote through the budget reconciliation process. Senator Bernie Sanders and Senator Mark Warner have pulled together a $3.5 trillion proposal separate from the infrastructure package designed to be pushed through budget reconciliation, which only requires a simple majority, the 50 Democratic senators, and a vote from Vice President Kamala Harris, who, as vice president, is president of the Senate. The plan that Sanders and Warner pulled together would expand child tax credits, make sure no one pays more than 7% of their income towards child care. It would guarantee paid family and medical leave. It would make community colleges free and provide universal pre-K and big investments in affordable housing, among other things. And it would also increase taxes on wealthy people and wealthy corporations in order to pay for it. The maneuvers in Congress this week seem designed to make Republicans look ridiculous, having already gotten Democrats to agree to a plan that doesn't even come close to fixing our infrastructure needs. And even with that lowball proposal, they won't raise taxes on the rich even a cent to pay for it, and in fact are trying to soak average working class people with a regressive tax, so-called user fees, where you and me will end up paying a greater share of our income to pay for infrastructure than billionaires. So Democrats seem to hope that with the mask torn off and all that exposed to the world, moderate Democrats will say forget the Republicans and get on board with just doing something themselves through budget reconciliation, simple majority. They'll fold in some of the stuff from the broader infrastructure plan into the $3.5 trillion plan pushed by Sanders and Warner, and they'll pass it all as a package. And so even though it won't meet the scale of the infrastructure problems, it certainly will do some important things for working class people, paid leave, access to education, affordable child care. So it'll speak to the needs of many of the working class people who put the Democrats there in the first place. And of course, that's in advance of next year's midterm elections. But it really is amazing when you take a step back and look at all of this, that the richest country on earth is debating how many bridges we should let collapse and whether or not to offer any paid sick days to every worker. But that's the reality of where we are in Congress today. That's the punch out for today. We're with you Monday through Friday, 5 p.m. here in New York, East Coast Standard Time, 2 p.m. in Los Angeles, Pacific Standard Time, and 9 p.m. GMT. And of course, you can support everything we do here at Breakthrough News at patreon.com/breakthroughnews. It's your patronage that keeps all of our offerings here at Breakthrough News moving forward. And of course, you can check us out across all your social media platforms, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, at BT Newsroom.